Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Thank you for tuning in today. We're going to talk about something that is always going on with me, and that is voices in my head. We're going to start there. Do you ever have those voices that keep pushing you into a thought that won't go away, and you keep pushing it down, and it still won't go away? Well, that's what happened to me over about a 3 or 4 year period, where this voice would tell me that I needed to do more. I needed to be more. And, you know, at first I took it as, is this about my music career? Is this about something else? And, I had spent a week of doing bookings with my my music and, you know, getting the band together, making sure we got the promo together. And I realized, my God, I talk about myself a lot in my life. And it was exhausting. And it's not like I was like, I'm going to get up and talk about myself today, or I'm just going to be my, you know, big ego. But what I do in this business is promote, and I have to promote. If I don't promote, then my music doesn't get out there. My career is not successful. But something was missing. I felt drained. I felt selfish, I guess, in a way. And I just felt self-involved. And I needed something. I needed something else. And so this little voice became a very large voice, and it was pushing me to do mission work. Now, I'd never done mission work before. I definitely worked all over my state of Michigan with nonprofits. You know, I worked at Gilda's, which is, you know, helps families with cancer, battling cancer. I've also worked with Detroit Children's Choir, which is a beautiful choir in Detroit that just opens up choir opportunities for schools all over that don't have those music programs. So I love working with kids. I knew that. I've done things with the homeless, you name it. I've done a lot, but there was still something else. And one day I was at my day job way back, and all of a sudden, something told me to pick up the phone and call a friend of mine who worked at my day job and ask her about a mission trip in Haiti. And I just did it. You know, you ever have those moments where you feel like it's an out-of-body experience? You're like moving and you don't know what you're doing, but you're just going along with it. This happens to me a lot. Maybe it's for a psychiatrist to talk to me about, but it just happens to me a lot. And I allow it. So I picked up the phone and I called her. Her name is Debbie. And I said, Debbie, do you still have those friends that go to Haiti every year? And she said, yes. And she asked me if I was interested. And I said, yes. But I knew they were through a Lutheran church, and I wasn't Lutheran. So I didn't know if there were like rules that you had to be, you know, a Lutheran to go. And she just said, no, I don't believe so. I think that anyone can go if they're interested. And, you know, they'd have to talk to Kim and Keith about it. So she said, would you like me to set up a dinner? And you can discuss it with them and find out if this is really something that you would be, you know, interested in. So she set up a meeting, dinner with them. She hosted it at her house. Well, prior to her setting it up, I had to find a way to break this wonderful idea to my husband. Now, my husband, he's a risk taker in his own way, but it's more like, I think I'm going to build a house, even though I don't know how to build a house. But it's his way. He, you know, he feels in control. He doesn't necessarily like risk taking where he doesn't feel that he has some sort of control in it. Now, me, I am totally opposite. I totally jump without a net. I don't think necessarily about the outcome of failure because I think it would stop me dead in my tracks. So we were having dinner at home one night, and I said, so I've decided that I'd like to do some mission work. Now, he's used to me doing all sorts of work around Michigan. And he said, okay. And I said, it's in Haiti. And he dropped his fork. So I had a feeling that things weren't just going to turn out the way I wanted them to. And he said, what are you thinking? Why would you go to a third world country? You can do work around here. I said, you're absolutely right. And I have. I said, I can't explain it. I don't know why, but this is what I really want to do. And I'd love your support. And he said, I know you. He said, you are, you know, trusting. You think everyone is a good person. And you're just going to go down there and think that you can just Susie cream cheese your way through, you know, this third world country. And I said, well, I may be kind and I may be personable, but I'm not dumb. And I would definitely, you know, be cautious. Well, he wasn't having it. And you have to understand, being married to me is not always a piece of cake, because I like to go. I like to get on the road. I like to travel. I like to just experience life at a level that not always everybody likes to be in. And my husband had a tendency to be an introvert, which nothing's wrong with that. It really works in our relationship, but he allows me. Sometimes he's always like, isn't it time for a road trip yet? Like he recognizes my restlessness. And so I said, there, you know, we set up a dinner. Why don't you come with me and see if this is, you know, maybe there's something in that dinner, that information that you'll feel a little bit better. He said, I doubt it. So I said to him with my fingers crossed behind my back, I said, look, if you're really still against it after this dinner, then I won't go. But I was totally lying. He just didn't know that. So he's like, okay, good. So we got there and there was Kim and Keith Waller, who are in charge of the Hope for Haiti mission trips, and Debbie and her husband. And Debbie pulled out all her photos because she had gone. And I'm looking at, you know, these orphans. I'm looking at the work they were doing. And my heart is just soaring. I'm like, this is exactly what I pictured. This is exactly what I really want to do. And I looked at my husband and his arms were folded. No crack of a smile, no emotion whatsoever. And I'm like, this ain't going very well. So unfortunately, Debbie's husband started talking about the very first time they went to Haiti, which was 20 years ago. At that time, you know, they didn't have a bus. They had to like ride on top of this truck and there was like armed guys with guns. And so my husband hears all this, and in the fear that Debbie's husband put into him, I'm like, this is never going to fly. So in the meantime, then Keith, who is a retired cop, told us that things are much better and they have more security in place. At the very end of the dinner, I asked Kim and Keith, well, would I be able to go? Would you consider me, you know, a good person to go? And they said, absolutely. And Keith looked over at Roger and he said, how do you feel about all this, Roger? And Roger said, I don't feel about it. I'm against it. And Keith looked at him and started laughing, and Kim laughed. And Keith said, that is exactly how I felt when my wife came home and said to me, we're going to go to Haiti. I'm going to take our daughter and our son to Haiti. And Keith said, oh, no, you're not. And Kim said, yes, I am. And they had a bit of a same argument that Roger and I had. Kim and I found that we were very much alike. And Keith and Roger definitely are a lot alike. They see things in, I guess they look at it as more realistic world. Or Kim and I are a bit like, you know, rainbows and unicorns. And I think that's what makes the world go round, that you have different kinds of people that perceive the world differently. We both can learn from each other. And that's important. So Keith explained that, you know, he does have security in place when we go, that, you know, we go as a group. We're never individually walking around Haiti. It is, you know, a dangerous place at times. Poverty causes some major intensity, and you can feel that in the city. But so when we got done with the dinner, Roger and I sat in the driveway in the car, and I was just hoping that he was going to come around. And he said, "I really don't want you to go." And I just sat there, and for once, I didn't say anything. Sometimes silence is very powerful. And I just kept quiet. He said, "But I see how you lit up. I saw what it meant to you." He said, "But we're getting you a lot of insurance." So he got me insurance, like the medevac type insurance, where if I'm in the middle of somewhere and I need to be flown out, you know, he thinks about these things. I do not. I don't always think about, you know, getting hurt. I'm more thinking about holding babies. That's what I'm thinking about. And so finally, you know, we came to a somewhat peaceful agreement, but he also said, "No matter what, you are to stand next to Keith the entire time. I don't care what you're doing. I want you next to Keith." So us missionaries being hilarious, the first day I got to the airport, well, let me back up a little bit. So unfortunately, I got really sick before we were leaving. I got one of those nasty Michigan cold flu, hold on to your lungs, can barely breathe. But I was like, I have to go. So because I was bringing a guitar over, I was only allowed one piece of luggage, which was a backpack. So somehow I packed up an entire week of clothing. I packed up my lunches, because we have to supply our own lunches. And but I was exhausted. I had a fever. I was sick. And so my husband, Mr. I Don't Want You to Go, actually packed my luggage for me. That's what you call love. That's what you call support. Even if you disagree with your spouse, that's the beautiful thing. So I get to the airport and I'm sicker than a dog, but I knew I had to go. And I was going to be leading the devotionals in the morning and the evenings at the mission. So I wanted to be there with the guitar that was donated. It was just a beautiful thought. And I'm like, I got to go. I can't like call in sick to Haiti. So I get to the airport, and this is where we started taking photos. So Keith, we took a photo of me standing next to Keith, Keith taking my backpack, Keith loading my backpack up into the airplane, you name it. So we just kept sending these to Roger, and he's like, haha, very funny. But while I was on the plane, the funny thing about it is I ended up sitting next to a person who was literally wiping down all the tables and the, you know, the seats. And she said, "I'm sorry, I'm a germaphobe." And I'm like, oh dear. And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I have the flu." And she said, "Would you," she goes, "I'm a nurse. Would you mind putting on a mask?" I go, "I don't have one. I'd love to, but I don't have one." She goes, "I do." So she handed me a mask and I literally put it on. I was very thankful for that because, one, I didn't want to get people sick and I didn't want to catch anything else. And so I turned to my mission group and they were just cracking up. So obviously the cameras were going crazy, taking pictures of me with the beautiful mask. But I got a nice compliment. Somebody told me I had nice eyebrows. Apparently that's a good focus when you have a mask on your face. So we get to Haiti. My ears have been blown out by the flight because my sinuses were so bad. So I could barely hear. It was very strange. So to go to the city where you've never been and everything is so loud. The airport is just crazy. I mean, it's intense. Think of O'Hare and times it by like, you know, 5,000. It's just people, the Haitians are trying to get to you. They want to carry your luggage so that you tip them. And then they fight over who's going to get your luggage. And I just stayed close to Keith because that's what Roger told me to do. And Keith directed all nine of us at this point on what to do. Now, we had bags and bags, those military bags full of medical supplies and food and diapers and you name it for the Haitians. And so we had to keep track of it. In the meantime, try not to let Haitians grab the bags so that we could keep track of them. They explained to us that, you know, from here, we had to go through a security process, which was scary. I mean, there were a lot of soldiers, guns, and it's all like, man, if you have ADD, you're all over the place. And I swear I have ADD, and I just couldn't stop looking, but I had to stay focused as well, which can be difficult for me. So we get to and get through security. And as we're walking out, we get bombarded. Just Haitians come running up to you. And, you know, it's a very strange feeling. I guess if you can wrap your head around this, think about a bunch of homeless people, you know, coming to you and you just don't know what to do. So we were instructed to just walk to the bus. Now, this bus, I'd heard all about this amazing bus driver. His name was Leonard. And everyone said that he just had the most beautiful soul. And supposedly, he is so well-liked that no matter where you are in Haiti, everyone says they're Leonard's cousin. And so somehow everyone's related to Leonard. And the minute we walked to the bus, I realized who he was. He had the hugest smile on his face. And it was his birthday that day. And so we loaded the bus. It was a big, beautiful green bus. And we met with the other mission team that had flown in from different states. So there was 16 of us on this bus. And so think about this. Here I am in Haiti, and never been, with people I don't know. I only know Kim and Keith from one meeting, really. So there's a lot of trust that has to go into it. You have to stay open. And I have faith. I have faith in God, and I believe that, you know, the universe and God will keep me safe. I just believed it. Well, the Kim and Keith suggested that I sit in the front of the bus with Leonard, since it was my first time, to really get a look at the city of Port-au-Prince. So I went, you know, climbed through and sat in the front with my guitar and Leonard, and he smiled, and we drove, and I had never seen anything like it. It was hordes and hordes of people walking around the city. The colors, there were so many bright colors. There was so much noise. It was like New York City on steroids. There's no streetlights, so the cars just go where they want. But Leonard was honking and people were honking, and I'm like, you know, and he explained to me that that's how they communicate with each other. One honk means something, two honks mean maybe you're going to go to the left, whatever the case may be. But to me, I was like, no way. I couldn't do it. But Leonard's like, no worries, no problem. That was his answer. And then I saw all these trucks with open backs covered with tin, and they're called tap taps. And what these are, because the gas prices are so high in Haiti, sometimes $12 a gallon, that people have to take what you'd consider like a taxi, but you literally just tap on the side and jump on, and then you pay them later. Well, all these are painted beautiful colors. I mean, Haiti, Port-au-Prince, it is artistic in the sense of the colors of the vibrancy, the women walking with, you know, the big, what they can carry on their head. A chiropractor could have a field day, I'm sure, in Haiti. But it's amazing. They carry, you know, gallons and gallons of water, fruit, laundry, you name it, is on their head. But they're all dressed in these vibrant colors. And they all look like they have someplace to go. And you have to understand, it's not like there's houses on the streets. The streets look like they just had, you know, this terrible storm that came through. You know, there are still boulders in the middle of the streets. There's dust and dirt and the smells. You could see people bathing on the side of the roads in the same place that people are going to the bathroom on the side of the roads. So it's a lot to take in, to the point that almost you shut down, because it is so sensitive to your eyes and your smells and your ears. All your senses are working on overload to take it all in and to make sense of it all. So we get to the orphanage where we were staying. We stayed on the top floor of an orphanage. When we walked in, we were greeted by this wonderful woman who whose name is Gertrude, and she takes all the missionaries in. So she showed us where we were staying. She walked us around the orphanage first, gave us a view of everything. One of the first orphans I saw was in a little crib, and her hands were tied to the crib, and I was mortified. And I was thinking, what kind of orphanage is this? And we all, nobody said anything, but we all were so shocked. And then finally, one of the missionaries said, why are her hands tied? Well, she had a disability, and her brain was starting to grow outside of her head. And so her senses were off. You know, she didn't really have much of a mind to work with. So she was eating her hands to the bone. And you're just, you know, horrified by the scene. And throughout this whole trip, you know, we saw these things that broke your heart. But on the other hand, it increased your gratitude for life. But one thing I saw too is that no matter what you saw in Haiti, people always smiled. They always found the brightness in their darkness. And to be allowed to be a part of that, to be allowed to surround yourself with these people that you could help, but then they help you because they show you love. They show you that, you know, material things are not always what makes your life, you know? They don't have much, but they make everything out of what they have. Leonard was a great example of that. And there's so much more to talk about this. And I am going to be leaving on my Haiti trip tomorrow. So when I get back, I would love to share my experience. But for now, I do want to play a song for Leonard. Unfortunately, 2 years ago this month, Leonard was murdered. And another thing that had never happened in my life where I was affected by something like this. It just couldn't wrap my head around it at first. I woke up in the middle of the night and the song came to me, or just a voice came to me and said, get up and write about it. And I couldn't. I was so angry. I'm like, no, it was terrible that he had to be taken from us. And I got up anyway because my voice wouldn't shut up. And so I thought I was going to write a sad song, but I ended up writing a song that Leonard would love. He loved music. He taught himself how to play keyboards, saxophone, guitar, so that he could lead his church in music. And so I thought, you know what? Leonard would want something upbeat. He would want something that would make people happy and smile and clap. And so all of a sudden, this song came to me and I wrote it. And we ended up putting it in the studio recording with Detroit Children's Choir and raising money for Leonard's family. And it's called Be the Light. And all I can ask is that you go out today, no matter where you are. You don't have to go to a third world country to just help someone. Give someone a helping hand. Give them a smile. It's all free. You can do it. And it makes you feel better. It's a great reward for yourself. Have a beautiful day. Be the light, be the light, be the light of God's love. I say be the light, be the light, be the light of God's love. I met a man who walked the land. He was the light of God's love. He did what's right. He shared the light. He fought the good fight of God's love. He said, be the light, be the light, be the light of God's love. He said, be the light, be the light, be the light of God's love.
He fed, he clothed, he comforted those who knew not where to go. Well, he sang God's praise, the roof he raised with the power of God to show how to be the light of God's love. He said, be the light of God's love. You may not see his green bus here, you're sure to miss his smile. But pick up that torch, it's time to go, your turn to walk his mile. How to be the light of God's love. It's time to be the light of God's love. Go out there.